Hey, business besties, welcome back to the Female Founder World podcast. It's Jasmine. I am the host of the show and the creator of the Female Founder World universe. It is so great to chat with you. Today, I have one of our OG business besties, Kristen Rose Berland. She is the founder of a business called Crateaway.
You are now entering Female Founder World with your host, Jasmine Garnsworthy.
If you are in the Female Founder World group chat, if you've come to our events, you actually probably met Kristen. But for those of you that haven't, Kristen, welcome. And what are you guys building?
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. Female Founder World has been an amazing resource for us. So I'm extremely happy to be sitting here and chatting with you. It's a very full circle moment. But Crateaway is building innovative crate solutions for pet parents that are on the go and constantly traveling with their furry best friend. And we're also looking into a lot of different pet health, wellness, and different health metrics that you can garner using the most commonly used pet parenting device. And so we are actually, we have a baseline crate that is super lightweight, innovative. You can take it everywhere with you. And then in the background, we're actually working on the first ever smart pet crate that will gather different metrics about your pet's health. And it will give you notifications if anything seems off and will hopefully save you a lot of money in the long term instead of going to emergency vet visits.
Okay, this is so smart. Also, my dad is a vet. Have I told you this before?
No.
I can't believe I've like glossed over this. We've had so many conversations about your business. My dad is a vet. So yes, very like interested in this space and very cool. I love it. You've been building in the Female Founder World community. I've been watching you since like, I don't know if it was day one, but pretty close to when this idea came about. How did it, you have been working full time while you've been building this. I want to understand the that step between, okay, this is a cool idea, I want it, to, you know, I'm going to put some money into this and like start developing a prototype. What did that look like? Because creating a crate, you weren't just like, oh, I'm going to copy and paste something that already exists. You have innovated it on something that is lightweight. It folds down. It's got all of these like features. It's hard to do.
It's extremely, extremely difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I knew how much was going to go into it, I probably wouldn't have ever done it. But, you know, it truly came from a consumer frustration. So at the time, my husband was at Wharton getting his MBA, and we were, it was 2020, so COVID year, we were traveling all over with the different students, and we would take our English Bulldog, Beau, with us everywhere we went. And we would carry a wire crate with us wherever we went. And it was just so incredibly frustrating. It was heavy. It was bulky. We would scratch ourselves. It was a nightmare. And I used to have to use my husband's old ice hockey bag to carry the crate from place to place. And I'll never forget, we were in Arizona in the airport and the bag just completely broke and the crate just fell out. And I was like, I don't know what to do, Matt. This is a disaster. And so, you know, like any other, you know, normal, rational person, I decided to create a business and save and spend my whole life savings on it. But yeah, no, I just dove in. I was like, this is a problem. And we lived at the time in Philadelphia close to a dog park. So I would just go up and ask people while I would bring Beau to the dog park. I would say, hey, do you use a crate? What type of crate do you use? Do you find that it's frustrating? Would you take your pet on, you know, do you travel with your pet, or does the crate experience hinder you traveling with your pet? And we actually found that a lot of people were experiencing that same issue. And, you know, being the partner of someone who was going to business school was really helpful because I would get all of the resources. I would get all of the decks from all the different entrepreneur classes. I would talk to his classmates. You know, he used to be on the ice hockey team at Wharton, and I would just ask people while we were sitting in the stands, hey, do you have a deck from, you know, whatever professor that week that I had looked up and watched one of his YouTube sessions? And I just really infiltrated the network there, and it was super helpful. But I would say our journey has not been the most natural because literally started out, sold my car for the seed money to start the business, sold my car for $9,000, and then truly used that money to figure out, okay, is this worthwhile? Is this something that I should go after? we spent that initial $9,000 on the conceptual engineering as well as doing some different testing of the market mm-hmm. for proof of concept. And then from there, I really realized, okay, this is a viable business. And I picked out two advisors from Wharton that really helped me. They were just fellow students to my husband. And they really helped me push the business forward of looking at, okay, what's the next step? And it was finding that first concept, mm-hmm. looking at the pain points that every single pet parent, pet specialist, every breeder that we would talk to, what their frustrations were in the current market, and poking through those holes and figuring out, okay, what does the consumer actually want? And we, you know, at the beginning, we were working on a size medium so that it would fit Bo, because he was our tester for every single crate that we used. But then towards the end, we actually found out that the most frequently bought crate is the size large, so 36 inches long. So then we had to change our whole strategy. Mm. But it's been a lot of trial and error. And honestly, I think we've done everything a bit backwards of, you know, just doing what we had to do to get everything started, of looking at, okay, how much money is this actually going to take? I had no clue mm. that a completely brand new engineered product was going to cost $150,000 to $300,000 in production molds. And to get those production molds, you have to find viable factories who are willing to take a chance on you and to build these things. And it's been a ton of trial and error. And also, when you're in that engineering space, a lot of it is male dominated. Mm-hmm. And so I would just go on YouTube and research and find everything that I could possibly find about mold engineering and custom plastic products so that I would have that background so that I wasn't being bullied in these mm-hmm. meetings. You know, I would go to into one meeting and they were giving me a quote for $500,000 and they wouldn't give me specific metrics about it. And I was like, this just seems a bit off. And then I would poke the holes, ask the questions, and I'm like, okay, so you can go down around, you know, $350,000. So why did you give me that $500,000 yeah. quote at first? But it's trial and error. And it's also bootstrapping the business from the beginning. So we started out $9,000 from selling my car, got the conceptual engineering, figured out, okay, this is a viable product in the market. And then for about two more years, we really tested the product, did way more surveys, and understood what the full market viability was. That's looking at the different specialists in the market, such as breeders, such as veterinary clinics, as well as, you know, small offices, and understanding, okay, what is the most prominent thing for that consumer? Mm-hmm. And
what was it?
So the three things that consumers really were focused on was lightweight, affordability, as well as safety. Mm-hmm. And so we targeted those three and completely made a custom product.
Smart. Okay. I love the idea of doing that market research, being able to drill down onto those three things, and then you know exactly what you're focusing on to be able to like deliver that back to them. But I want to stay in those early days. You talked about like selling your car.
Yeah.
What did that $9,000 get you, and when did you need more money in the business?
Yeah. So I would say the $9,000, it was $5,000 for conceptual engineering. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it was $4,000 for the first prototype. And so, you know, it went a little bit fast, but building a custom product, it's going to be extremely costly and your overhead is very high. But after that, I kept working. I have a corporate job.
Yep.
And so I kept working my corporate job, and every penny that I made was put back into the business, mm-hmm. You know, except for living costs and stuff like that. Yep. But it's a lot of sacrifice in the beginning. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And talk to me about crowdfunding, because that's something else that's been helping a lot as well, or something else that you've been trying out. What's your experience been, and
yeah,
how much money has that contributed?
So I thought, you know, Kickstarter. It's an amazing platform. Mm-hmm. It's super founder friendly. Mm-hmm. And I actually got really taken advantage of. And it was an awful experience.
Oh, shit. That's such a shame.
Yeah. You'll find that, you know, I if anyone is a part of the Female Founder World group chat, Geneva group chat, you will see that I made a full review. You can look at it. But part of that experience, I think that, you know, Kickstarter started out as a great company, you know, really wanted to help founders. But now there's all these other companies that realize, okay, this is a platform full of vulnerable founders where we can try to tell them, make them big promises of big returns if they pay us in the beginning to help run their campaign. So you'll find that when you scroll down and look at the bottom of Kickstarters, pay attention to the ribbons that are across it, whether it says marketed by X, sponsored by X, and you'll notice that those campaigns, 36% of those campaigns, the campaign dollars, are actually given back to the company and the founder. And then, you know, 64 or less are given to those marketing as well as ad spend. So it's really, really, really interesting, and it's pretty disappointing. So you
worked with an agency, and it just didn't.
Yeah. So I was starting my Kickstarter. I was like, you know what? I feel like this would be a great fit for it, and it's our company is about other pet consumers, and I feel like it's a very consumer friendly company. And would be something cool, innovative that could be on that platform.
You can like show it in video. People get it really quickly as soon as you see a video of it. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And what I found was at the very beginning, a marketing company called me and said, we can promise you 3X returns if you give us X amount of thousands of dollars to run your ad spend, to set you up for success on your Kickstarter of the layout of it. Mm-hmm. I'm talking when you go to a Kickstarter and you scroll down and you see the layout of those campaigns.
They're building a landing page, basically.
Exactly. Exactly. And so what I learned was actually all of the traffic that is being sent to your Kickstarter, that's helping Kickstarter, right? They're getting all that data of those consumers. It's not helping your business that much. And every single dollar that we made on our campaign was through my connections and actually going out there, having meetings with people. And they were like, I want to support you. I will do whatever I can to help you with your Kickstarter. And at that point, you know, I'm a compliance officer. That's been my corporate life. And so I'm pretty by the book. And I found that experience was very predatory. And I was getting email after email from all these different companies that were promising me things that would help out the Kickstarter. So I would say if anyone is going to go down that route, be very, very, very careful of who you interact with and who you give money to help you with that. My suggestion would be to instead put all of that traffic, take all that traffic, put it on your own website, create an email wait list, create a pre-order, something that you can do on your own website. So then you own that information, you own that data, as well as it softens up your SEO, right?
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of traffic coming to your website instead of going to an outsourced website where they take 5%, 5 to 10% of the dollars that are spent on your company.
That's really interesting, that story. And I am so sorry that you had that experience. That's such a, and like, but like, good on you for continuing and not just having that first experience and being like, oh, you know what, this isn't going to be for me. This isn't going to work. You just kind of like figured out the next thing. Were you able to raise any money through the Kickstarter, or was it just a loss?
Yeah, we raised around $15,000. So it was really helpful. But again, it was, I could have just done a safe note for those, you know, individuals, and then also people who did do pre-orders. I could have done that on my own website. So, and I cut off the campaign. I stopped, you know, sending it out after I realized that the ethical side of me was like, I really don't like this, and I don't like what this platform stands for. And I don't like who they're letting into it of all these marketers. So I was like, I just don't want to contribute anymore to this. But I would say that capital definitely did help us, and it was definitely needed at that time. But moving forward from that, I just bootstrapped again, completely just taking it out of my own pay.
So that's how you were funding the business in the early days.
Yeah.
How were you starting to kind of get the message out that you were creating this thing to build that early traction? Because you have a pretty exciting announcement that we're going to share pretty shortly on the show. But I want to understand what you were doing to build momentum before that happened.
Yeah, I would say trial and error. It was a lot of – so actually, I wasn't – since I was working a corporate job, I was very careful about what I was putting out there.
Did you want to not associate yourself with it in the beginning because you were afraid of your work, like, finding out or –
Well, so I think that it's also – it's self what's the correct term for this? Like self-impotence. I was nervous of like, okay, am I actually going to take this leap? Yeah. Because, you know, I worked really, really, really hard to get into my corporate job.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where it's like, I know that I can do something amazing, but it's taking that big leap of faith. And actually at my company, you had to disclose, you know, if you were doing any work outside of it. So once I told my boss and my VP, I felt more confident and comfortable going after it because they were like, you know what, we support you 1,000%. You know, I was getting overperformed metrics in my corporate job. So, you know, and I'm just a very, very hard worker. So no matter what I'm committed to, I will work hard for it. So between my own company and my corporate job, I was working very hard at both. But I think that, you know, taking that leap of actually sharing to the world what you've been working on is really difficult. And it's like, okay, I know that this makes sense, but I'm really scared that, you know, my friends who, you know, don't really know much about the pet space are going to be like, oh my God, what the hell is she doing? but I think that it just, you just got to put yourself out there. And one of the main things that we did was a week before we were about to go to our biggest expo, our first time ever being out in public, we started our Instagram page and just started doing content from that event. So we did the LA Pet Health Expo in April of 2023. And that's the first time that the public ever saw what we were doing. And it was super helpful. But then I also created, before April of 2023, I created an Instagram account for Bo and my dad. And it was called Bo and Grandpa. And we, like, I was just, Bo is so obsessed with my dad and it's really, really cute. So I just kind of tested the different layouts that you can use on it, you know, what was working in the pet community, what was not working in the pet community. And it was a lot of fun. So I tested those theories in the beginning and then started CreateAway's account. We did this big event, LA Pet Health Expo, that was just incredible. Everyone was lined up at our booth. People were trying to take home our crates. I was like, no, these are prototypes. You cannot take this home. It's got thousands of dollars. Yeah. Please stop. But it was really in that moment when we were there, I was like, okay, I have something here. Yeah. And I need to go after it. There's this unrelenting feeling when you're in these situations, when you're building something. And of course, there's also seeds of doubt. But when your gut is just telling you to keep going, you can feel that. And I think that I can't describe it, but I just knew. I was like, I just need to keep going. And it's really tough. There are going to be moments where you're like, I don't know if I can keep I don't know if I can keep doing this. I don't know if this is what I'm meant for. What am I doing? But there's that little voice inside that says, just keep going, keep going, keep going. And even if it's something small that you do that day, it's still progress.
So talk me through, let's just like zoom out for a second and get an idea of the timeline. So when did you first have the idea? Because this is early 2023 that you had your first expo. You started kind of being out in the world on Instagram about what you were building. What was that time between having the idea, creating your prototypes? Was it a year more?
So I met my now husband in 2020.
Yeah.
In May of 2020. And then I subsequently met Bo. The joke is like that I fell in love with Bo and not my husband. but so once we started traveling with Bo, I was like, okay, this is an issue. So around end of 2020, I was like, okay, this is an idea. This is something that I think could be viable. And then in 2021, I really worked on that test and that theory and that thesis. And that's when I sold my car in 2021.
Yep.
And got that initial money. And then in November of 2021 was when we went through the conceptual engineering.
Yep.
And went through the tests that we possibly could using CAD models. So engineering.
Which is like a design program.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's where you can fully work on the product in a 3D prototype through this platform called CAD or SolidWorks, and you'll kind of understand what's going to work, what's not going to work. We also had – so during this time, instead of going with a firm that was going to at the beginning be like, you know, $50,000 plus mm-hmm. where they could take you from start to finish, I found through cold calling all of these different engineers as well as manufacturers in the U.S., they set me up with this one guy in Wisconsin, and his engineering firm was called After Hours Engineering, and it was a bunch of really, really smart biomedical engineers who, after hours of their normal jobs, they work on startups at a very discounted rate. So their normal rates for being biomedical engineers is something like $300 to $500 an hour, whereas I got them for $100 an hour. And then I also met NASA engineers within that network and the founder network, and they were also pet parents. Mm-hmm. So I had all these really incredible engineers working on the product, understanding that, you know, safety, lightweight, yeah. affordability, those three key components. And we received our first, so that was, you know, November of 2021 to June of 2022. We received our first prototype in June of 2022. And then from there, we tested it on Beau, and we just kept taking it with us wherever we went, realizing, you know, at first there was a top opening when on the edge of where the gate was. And instead we learned that it's actually much better if it goes across the, you know, horizontal part of the crate. And so there were a bunch of different learning lessons within that first test of the prototype. Mm-hmm. And so then around, I guess, September of 2022 was when I met you. Mm-hmm. And that was when I moved to LA. We had just gotten married. I moved to LA and just fully committed to CreateAway. And that first week that I moved to LA, I went to the Female Founder World event, met three of my very best friends till this day that are incredible founders. And
love this. So it, much.
Seriously, like, you know, sidebar, just meet as many female founders as you possibly can. Totally. Because they're the only ones who are going to understand you and understand the challenges that you're going through. And you can call them hysterically crying.
Yeah.
And there's no judgment.
You need to add some new founder friends to your like friendship circle if you're going to be doing this, especially if you're going to be doing it as a solo founder. You need support around you and people who get it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So this takes me to a very exciting announcement that you have that I have known for a little while. And I've been kind of like watching your Instagram, waiting till you've kind of mentioned it. What is it and how did it come about? You're famous now.
So a very, very, very exciting opportunity. There is a new show called Side Hustlers that is produced by Hello Sunshine.
Mm-hmm. Also, that's Reese Witherspoon's production company, everyone. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Who have done like all of your favorite book adaptations of the Hulu series. Like, yeah.
Yes.
Big deal.
Yes. They are incredible. Reese and Sarah Harden, they are...
Who's a COO or CEO?
CEO, yep. Yes. Wonderful, wonderful people, as well as that whole production company. I just love them. But anyway, so we have... There's this new show called Side Hustlers. It is a 5-episode docuseries, 60-minute episodes, and it will be airing on Roku Channel on March 1st. And it follows the journey of 6 female-founded companies that are vying for mentorship and investment by Emma Greed of Skims, Safely, Good American.
And just like one of the most incredible operators, business leaders. She's like the Kardashian CEO. Insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And as well as Ashley Graham, the supermodel who is also an investor and an amazing, amazing female founder.
Okay. How did that happen?
Well, you know, the funniest part of this is that it all ties back to Female Founder World, because that first event that I went to in September of 2022, I met one of my very dear friends, Mary, who's the founder of Sock Candy, and she was actually on a show called The Big Shot with Bethany Frankel on HBO. And so she's been in that world. So she found out about the show and that the casting production was taking applications. And she sent it to me and she was like, this is amazing for you. It's following female founders who are working full-time jobs. And, you know, you get the opportunity for mentorship and investment. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, this does sound amazing. So I had one day left to apply. I applied, and then the next day I got a call from production, and they were like, okay, we want to take you through some casting interviews. It was just so surreal. I was like, you know, you hear about this all the time of people who are just like, yeah, I filled out an application, and then you know what? It actually ended up working out.
I mean, someone is winning this stuff, guys. Someone is getting on TV shows. Someone is getting these big grants. Like, it may as well be you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If I, you know, can give any advice, it's just put your hat in the ring.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you think it's never going to happen, because you never know what life is going to throw at you. And it could be an amazing opportunity. But it was one of the most amazing opportunities of my life. It was sincerely eye-opening, life-lifting. Mm. It was incredible. It was really, really, really hard work. But it was the start of my new life now, which is, you know, goodbye corporate Kristen, hello founder Kristen, full-time founder Kristen.
Yeah.
And I'm just so excited.
Also, at the time of recording this, you have not yet quit your job, but your plan is to tell them tomorrow. Which, like, I absolutely love talking to you at this particular inflection point, because that's the question we get all the time. It's like, when do I quit my job? When do I go all in? And I love that you are doing it tomorrow. How do you feel about that?
Literally every single event that I go to, and there's, you know, founders that are sitting there doing the panel, I always ask them, when did you know when to quit your job? That is my number one question to people, because I've been at such an inflection point of like, okay, do I do this? Do I do it now? But it is truly, you have to wait until you know, I'm a risk manager. I don't like a lot of risk. And right now, I don't know what it is in me, but I feel like there's actually a path forward. Mm. And also, you know, I've saved a bit now where I feel more comfortable doing so. But it definitely took me a while. You know, we were talking 6 months ago and you were like, Kristen, why haven't you quit your job yet?
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think also too, it's being comfortable with the unknown, but also feeling very secure that you've done your homework and you know what's ahead. And also, you know, I'm at a very different point now where I have these incredible, incredible female founder pioneers behind me. And it truly is completely accurate, that phrase of your network is your net worth. Mm-hmm. And getting those people behind you that keep pushing you and keep pushing you. It's not going to be easy, but you just have to work your ass off.
I'm going to talk about that a little bit in a minute, but I want to ask what kind of lifestyle changes you're making to de-risk as you're moving into running the business full time, because are you paying yourself the company? Is that going to be like, that's not happening yet?
Not happening yet.
So talk me through like how you're reducing your costs so that you can go all in on this, because I think it's just really important for people to hear actually what this involves.
Yeah, no, it's, and you know, this is another question that I always ask fellow female founders is, how much money did you have in your bank account when you felt like it was comfortable to make the leap? And it truly, so what we're doing right now is, we were living in LA, which I love LA. Like, oh, I'm so sad.
You can go back.
I know. We're going to be back one day. Mark my words, we'll be back in LA. And also, if, you know, anyone wants to, you know, give me some side gigs back in LA, I will go, you know, twist my arm. But we are actually moving to Florida. That way we can save some more money on taxes and, you know, just feel more comfortable in the set salary that my husband has. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a woman, it's really difficult to give that up, right? It's relying on your significant other.
Yeah.
I was born and raised by Philadelphia women who were go-getters, extremely independent. My mom was the breadwinner in our family. And it's been really, really, really difficult for me to grasp not having a set salary. You know, I've always been that person that has had to have my own money,
yeah.
make sure that I'm good on my own. But I think that, you know, I am married now. That person is supposed to be supporting me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had multiple conversations with my husband about it of, okay, are we sure that this is the path forward? Are we sure that this is what we want to do? But you get to a point where it's like, this is the only answer.
Yeah.
There's no other answer. And also, you know, if something does happen, we've de-risked, right? Yep. We're in Florida. We're not going to be spending as much as we were yep. on our household, on our expenses. And we feel very, very confident now that we'll be good. We'll yep. be set,
yep.
Especially losing my salary, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to be a founder in California. It's not very friendly. And but it was an amazing place to be. So we're de-risking moving to Florida and then also – you know, just de-risking living in a smaller place,
mm-hmm.
Paying less to live and just trying to set ourselves up for, you know, more forward moving momentum. But right now we just have to de-risk.
Yeah. And you're committing as well. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You're de-risking so that you can make that commitment. And I understand where you're coming from with that thought of not wanting to be fully dependent on somebody else and all of that. But also like, if this works, it works for both of you.
Right.
You know, like this is a win for your family unit. It's
right.
not like you're going off and doing something that's complete. It's building a life together. So
yeah.
amazing that he's so supportive
yeah.
and good on you for working through that because yeah. like you said, there is no other answer.
I knew I was always going to marry a Wharton guy because that was part of my risk strategy. I was like, okay, if I want to take a risk, I know at least like that person will be smart enough to figure
yeah.
it out.
Yeah.
So, you know, if there's anyone listening to this podcast that's single, like, you know, just set your settings, your Bumble settings, whatever it might be, to a local MBA and see what you got.
I love it. That is great advice. I'm so into it. Okay. So let's go back to the TV show for a second. And I want to understand, you know, these are the women who are the mentors on the show are honestly some of the most incredible, impressive women in business. And I can't even imagine what it would be like to be getting advice from people like that. What are some of the hard questions they asked that made you kind of rethink the business? What's some of the really tough learnings that you took away from that? Give us the cliff notes.
Yeah, I think that I was the only pre-market company that was chosen to be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I was already at a disadvantage moving into it, whereas people had proven revenue streams, people had proven products out there in the market, whereas I was still in my technically idea/prototype stage. And I had to prove myself. I had to prove my grit, my tenacity. And I think that was the hardest part. And, you know, when you look at this, when people watch the show, they'll have hopefully no idea what was going on in the background. But to get a bit granular here is a week before the show came out, one of my coworkers died mm-hmm. and I had to completely take on their portfolio and at my corporate job.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really difficult. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God, you know, it was a terrible situation. I feel terrible about it. And it was moving forward of like those emotions, like of thinking about that person, that individual who had such a positive impact on my corporate life, losing them, and then working harder at my corporate job while also working at the TV show. And I took it like it was business. I was very, very, very regimented and super focused on winning that mentorship and moving forward. And it was hard. Some of the most the early lessons were trying to figure out how do I prove viability to two non-pet parents.
Yeah.
Like I had done so much Googling of, okay, what pets do Emma Greed and Ashley Graham have? And of course, like one of them is this beautiful Vogue like photo shoot of Ashley in a bed with a, you know, golden doodle. And I was like, wait, is that her dog or is this just like a shoot dog? I have no idea. But I actually found out that Emma's sister has a bulldog. And so there was a bit of camaraderie there. And then when we were pitching, you'll find out that she has a very emotional connection to the thesis of Create Away.
Okay.
And it was really interesting. But I think at the beginning, it's all about showing and proving who I am and proving that tenacity to make the business successful. And then also thinking about the growth strategy of Create Away. Those were really hard in the beginning to conceptualize for people who are more into the fashion and, you know, just completely separate industries than the pet industry. But it was incredible. It was a lot of hard work. It was awesome to just sit in a room every single week with brilliant minds, as well as the other female founders that are on the show are so amazing. And it created this sisterhood. Everyone was just so nice and so passionate about helping one another. Whereas, you know, and I think that's also too to Hello Sunshine. Like that's what yes. they do. They bring people together and propel people.
Yeah.
And that really, really showed through. And, you know, to this day, we all have a group chat. We send each other messages every single day of, hey, does anybody need help with this? What's the ask and what's the give?
Yeah.
You know?
Which is if you aren't in the group chat, that is kind of a framework we use for a lot of our group calls, where you kind of come to the call, and we do it at our dinners and that kind of thing as well, where you come and you've got an ask and this is what I need help with, and you have an offer, this is what I can help you with. And I think that a lot of the time when you get women in a room, they're very hesitant to make the ask, and so you have to really give them permission to do it. And so that's why I think it's great to have that structure around it. You're someone who's like seems to, having watched you come through this, has really like cemented and concreted the story behind what you're doing. And I think that you've been able to really clearly now communicate that through how you know, you're able to get on the show. You're now talking with angel investors and raising some money, and now also doing like more video content on social as well. How have you like really formulated what that story is?
Yeah, I think
because it's important, like it is really important. Once you get that down, I feel like a lot of other things fall into place.
Absolutely. And I think that I struggled with it at the beginning of, okay, am I going to be the face of this business? I tried to make Bo the face of the business as much as possible. Honestly, it was really hard to find a voice for him. He doesn't talk. So I'm like, come on, Bo. Like, we need to get
pull
you talking.
Pull your weight, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he is our chief operation officer, but my gosh, he's lazy. But no, it's honestly, and I'm not a content creator. I'm not an Instagram influencer. I'm not a TikToker. I had no clue how to do any of this stuff, but you just gotta start.
Yeah.
You have to start from nothing. I didn't know how to engineer, but I just learned along the way. Yeah. Ask questions, ask people what they're using. So I think that honestly, what really helped me hone in on the story was everyone would always ask, why did you do this? Why did you build this? And, you know, I have a Google sheet of every single question that I've ever been asked on either a grant submission, an interview, just random questions that I'll find that are on different platforms that really help you solidify your thesis, as well as prove the problem, the viability, the feasibility.
So you have this spreadsheet.
Yes.
Sorry, you have this document, and what you have your answers like sketched out in there.
Yeah,
practice.
Have my answers sketched out.
I want to get this list of questions.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to share it.
Okay, we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, and it's really helpful also to talk to your advisors about this.
Yes.
And I think that when looking at the story of the company, what I've learned is that you need outside people to ask you these questions and give you direct feedback on that. Because when you're so far into the product, when you're I'm in it. I'm, you know, 50 miles deep into that mine, whereas other people are, you know, they're right on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, okay, she's talking about, you know, if you looked at my slide decks from the very beginning, I had 15 different things about why Create Away was different. But people would look at that and be like, okay, this is great, but it's kind of confusing.
Yes.
And so you really have to just take those 15 things, look at the three to four most important parts of it, and then tailor your story around those key points.
Yes.
And honestly, a lot of it is pointing back to quantifiable data.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the surveys that you've done to do proof of concept, when you look at the different conversation points even that you're having with individuals. You know, it's hard to get people to take a survey. So even if you just go out to the street, go out to the, you know, for me, it was going to the dog park. Mm-hmm. And then you just quickly jot down what they were saying. And, yeah. you know, you don't have to be rude. You can just be like, I'm just going to tabulate some notes on our conversation. Because if they're like, oh, she's not interested, she's on her phone. I'm like, no, I want to capture what you're saying.
I'm so interested.
Yes. And this is actually super helpful. So I want to capture it. And, you know, sometimes I would even record conversations that I was having. But I think what was really helpful for me was taking that backstage look at it, asking my advisors, okay, what do you think about this story? What do you think about this slide deck that tells the story? Give me tangible feedback on that. And then also linking that with quantifiable data. Because when you go to these investor meetings, they don't care about theory, right? Everybody can theorize. But if you have data behind it, that's what people care about. And my whole entire life prior to CreateAway was creating quantifiable data out of qualitative data, which is freaking difficult, but it works. And it's something that you will find people will trust you a lot more.
And I think that's so powerful how you're talking about shaping your story around that data that you're pulling as well. And then it's kind of, you've got both of that. You've got the storytelling aspect as to like the why, and then you also have the data to kind of back it up. So the last thing I want to ask you is for a resource recommendation. And then very sadly, the show is ending. I cannot believe it. I feel like we've been trying to get this one on the books for a really long time. I could chat to you all day, but I'm looking at the time here thinking, shit, we've really gone over.
Yeah, I have. Okay. So I love this part of the show. This is my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. So resources. I think I mentioned this, you know, a little bit indirectly, but, you know, kind of a joke resource slash very serious resource is if you're single or if even if you're just, you know, looking for friends, go on Bumble, BFF, go on Bumble in the relationship one. And just set your location to your closest business school. Even if it's going for coffee with someone who's a student there.
Yeah.
Learn how to integrate yourself into that network.
Yeah.
You know? And who knows? You might get married.
Yeah.
Or you can just let them go to the wayside.
Yeah. Or they might be your co-founder.
Or they might be your co-founder. Exactly. I think that going towards those resources – where you know that they're passionate already about what they're doing if they're already in business school, you know, and you don't have to take on debt to go to business school if your partner's going to business school, unless you marry them, which is, you know, whatever.
Share the debt,
But I think that that's a fun resource.
Love
answer.
That, yes.
Number two would be if you are listening to this and if you are not on the Female Founder World Geneva chat, get your butt on that chat.
Yes.
Because
link in the show notes, guys. Come and join. It's free.
That is where you will learn and you will create friendships and you will create networks that just last forever. I found two of my advisors from that group chat through conversations from that group chat, not even directly speaking to them, but speaking to people who knew them and said, wow, I really want you to talk to this person. Yes. So get on that group chat, number two. Number three is I challenge every single person listening to this, start a conversation with someone, either on that group chat or someone that you're going to cold LinkedIn message, because you have no idea what their network is.
Yeah.
And they can point you in the direction to a person that could be life-changing for you. My two advisors that I gathered through Female Founder World group chat was from talking to someone in Female Founder World who then pointed me towards an individual who is now my advisor. And then that advisor introduced me to my other advisor. And they have been game changing for me. You really have no idea who knows who in this world.
Yes.
And you have to get out there and you have to send an introduction for yourself. And you also have to ask.
Yes.
Always ask. You never know if you don't ask.
Amazing advice. Kristen, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been awesome. And I'm very excited about what you guys are doing at CreateAway.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Female Founder World podcast. If you want more from Kristen, first of all, go and watch her show that is out on Roku now. It's called Side Hustlers and it's out now. And if you want more direct contact with Kristen, we are hosting a free group business coaching call for the Female Founder World community. You do need to register, so I've popped a link in the show notes so you can get your name on that invite list.